not to beat around the bush, I'm not going to say the heyday of newsletters is over, but it's certainly, certainly more difficult now. This is like a real, real, real secret sauce here of taking your business from making 20K a year to making $2 million a year.
This is not something that I would normally do, but can I wire you 50K right now?
This is like the deepest, most serious level of the misconception. A lot of people, when they just start out, it's like, I'm so lucky. Thank you for sponsoring me. It's like, no, like you did the legwork that they're not willing to do. They're not willing to create the content you create.
We did 24K in ad sales this week and booked 16 calls for our agency absolutely free. Build your list, people. This is a tweet by Marketing Max. All right, Max, you got to tell me, dude, how the heck did you make that happen?
That's kind of the average numbers across the board that we do on a weekly basis. There's a handful of secret sauces, as I like to call them, or recipes inside of the newsletter, how we acquire subscribers and how we sell to advertisers and how we convert our newsletter subscribers into booked calls. But at the end of the day, I think it really comes down to frequency and not being afraid to ask for something in some way, shape, or form, and having empathy in the ask. A lot of people, they might send a newsletter once or twice a week. I send 12 newsletters a week. And if the content is good enough, if people like the content, why shouldn't you send 12? Why shouldn't you send 20? Why shouldn't you send 25? If the content is good enough and if the content to audience fit is good enough, they're going to look forward to seeing it. That gives you more opportunities to ask, hey, are you interested in getting help with this thing, right? Empathy. We can uncover a lot of it, but I always think everything comes back to frequency and not being afraid to ask.
Insane. All right. So let's dig into this. So give us a bit of an overview of like, what is the type of content that you're sending about your newsletter, about your business? Like that number, 24K in ad sales, is what some people make an entire year with a YouTube channel or an Instagram account or something. So like, give us a bit more on like how you've been able to build that.
Yeah, well, first of all, we have a full-time ad salesperson. So again, everything coming back to frequency and then not being afraid to ask, because we send 12 newsletters a week, we have in the bottom of every single newsletter, if you're interested in getting your product or service in front of 200,000 B2B decision makers, see if you're a good fit to partner with Marketing Max here. That in and of itself, I think, is different than what I've seen a lot of creators do in a couple different ways. The first is we have it in the bottom of every single email that's sent, period, end of story. A lot of the times people will do once a month, a couple times a year. We have it in the bottom of every single newsletter. Number two, empathy, right? Empathy is not like, oh, I feel bad, I feel sad for you. Empathy is putting yourself in their shoes to say, what do they want most? They want to get their product or service in front of potential customers. Where I see a lot of content creators and other newsletters that are more sophisticated media companies even than us, they'll say like, hey, want to sponsor our newsletter? But you're not telling people what's in it for them. By having empathy, saying, oh, what you really want is to get your product or service in front of 200,000 people, by dangling that carrot, what I like to say, the juiciest carrot that your target audience wants most, by dangling that in front of them, you get a lot more people to click on that ad. Now, the other main secret sauce for us that really almost doubled our inbounds for people wanting to sponsor the newsletter is we also put that same tagline in the middle of the newsletter. So like our morning newsletter, there's four or five sections. There's a summary at the top of the highlights of the day. There's a primary ad. Then there's headlines, the headline news in the marketing industry. Then there is an insight of the day. And we put a one sentence thing in between the headlines and the insight of the day that says, hey, if you're interested in getting your product or service in front of 200,000 people, because people don't always make it to the bottom. And so not being afraid to ask, but doing it in a way where it's empathetic. Like, you're paying me money, but the main reason you're paying me money to sponsor my newsletter is because you're going to get something out of it. Like, I'm here to help you. And so again, the empathy, I think, is really important in the way that you frame it.
I just want to like harp on this point. You would be shocked at how many people feel as though their minds are blown when I say like, hey, do you realize you actually probably have decision makers in your audience who would want to get in front of this very idea of what you're saying is just put a sentence, hey, you want to sponsor this, you know, this newsletter. So I hope people like really latch onto this and try this, like this very, very low hanging fruit tactic here. Another question, what's the ratio of like inbound to outbound at this point? Are you able to just like fill up all of your inventory with the people clicking that link? Are you doing outbound?
Yeah, we have probably 60% of all of our advertisers come inbound. It's not that way for every niche at all, but most niches, a large handful of your total addressable potential advertiser market is on your list in some way, shape, or form. If you have, you know, a few thousand people, there's definitely potential advertisers, potential partners on your list. And oftentimes people don't know who they are because they're not actively looking at the emails, or people are signing up with their personal Gmail. They're not signing up with their work email.
Right.
And so there's a handful of tools. One's called like Mega Hit Dot app, where it'll actually comb through all of the emails on your list and identify this person works at a big company or this person is a potential advertiser based on the industry or whatever. But the other thing that we do, and this is like a real secret sauce here. So if 60 to 70% of our revenue on the advertising side comes inbound, I would say roughly half of that comes the moment someone signs up for the newsletter. The moment someone signs up for our newsletter, we collect their email, we send them to a type form that asks them normal questions that a media company or a creator might want to ask to better get to know their audience, right? So we can create better content. What size company do you work at? What's your job title? What are you most interested in learning these days? All of those fun things. We then ask virtually the same question. Would you be interested in getting your product or service in front of 200,000 people or B2B decision makers? If they say yes, we then say, what's your budget? And we only ask the budget. We have conditional logic set up in Typeform to only ask that question if they say they work at a company that has less than X amount in revenue. And then we say, what's their budget? And if it's less than our minimum, we say, hey, you're not a good fit, but like reach out when you can afford XYZ. If they are, then me and my salesperson get a notification and they get dropped off on a Calendly page. And if they don't book a call, we follow up 10, 12 times to say, hey, we have some really cool products to help you get in front of our audience that we'd love to walk you through that would de-risk the investment a lot. And that's kind of a really big win for us is the ability to de-risk a lot of potential advertisers' investments. That's another way we're able to book a lot of calls.
All right, man. I'm gonna speak what I think a lot of people are listening or watching are feeling. You're following up with these people 10 or 12 times if they're not booking a call. They hate me, Max. I can't do that. Like they're gonna hate me for doing that. They're gonna be so annoyed. Overcome that limiting belief, those types of fears that people might have, selling themselves and selling their inventory.
You're doing them a favor by letting them sponsor your newsletter. They don't have access to your target audience. It would cost them significantly more money, significantly more time, energy, and headache to go to Facebook ads or go to Google ads or go to any other advertising platform to reach the audience that you have. It's not like, I think a lot of people when they just start out, it's like, woe is me, you know? Whoa, like I'm so lucky. Thank you for sponsoring me. Holy moly. Oh my gosh. It's like, no, like you did the legwork that they're not willing to do. They're not willing to create the content you create. They're not willing to put in the time and the energy to build an audience. They should be doing it. Smart companies do this, but most don't. What is the next best thing for them? It's sponsoring your newsletter, sponsoring your Instagram page, whatever it might be. You know, the average B2B decision maker needs to see or hear your brand at least 5 times, but the number actually is closer to 12 these days, depending on what the cost of your product or service is, before they even decide if they're going to work with you. Why not follow up 10, 12, 13 times? Like that's the difference. The difference is you're sending an email and then you're like, oh, they probably don't like me. But in reality, they probably had a really busy day. They had to go pick their kid up from school because it was too cold and the school got closed and they only responded to the urgent emails. And then they deleted it or it just sat there. Follow up a second time. Well, maybe they had the flu that day, or maybe they had another urgent fire, or maybe they had a really, really, really bad work day and they don't have budget. But you follow up a month later, mm-hmm. and suddenly they have a lot of cash and they're like, we want to diversify our advertising. We want to try something else.
All right. I want to run through a brick wall right now, man. I feel sufficiently motivated. You mentioned woe is me. A woe is me that I've heard quite a bit from newsletter operators over the last year or two is like the newsletter ad heyday is over, right? It's hard for me to get, you know, sponsors, or I'm feeling commoditized, right? Like they're comparing me to other newsletters and it's all based on CPC or you know, CPA or whatever. And it's just like, it's just so hard now. The gold rush is over. How do you separate yourself to have such a healthy business given some of the challenges others have had?
Okay, so I just gave you all the motivation to run through a brick wall. So I want to pull you back through the brick wall a little bit. Not to beat around the bush. I'm not going to say that the heyday of newsletters is over, but it's certainly, certainly more difficult now to monetize a newsletter via ads. When I first got into this game 3 or 4 years ago, the supply and demand was drastically in our favor, right? There was a decent size of advertisers who woke up every day ready to spend money on newsletter ads. And there was a very small amount of newsletters. Now, the supply and demand has reversed. That's okay. The supply and demand is still enough for us to make money from it, and it's still enough to have value. You need to be clever about what you're actually pitching to your potential advertisers. Do you want to buy a primary ad for $2,000? Not so interesting. Do you want to buy 1,000 clicks guaranteed at a $5 CPC? You want to spend $5,000? Well, that's more interesting because the more sophisticated advertiser you work with, they know that if they send relatively qualified traffic, if they send relatively good, interested people who would probably be interested in the product or service that they sell to a specific landing page, they know that that landing page is going to convert at a specific number, 2%, 5%, 10%. Selling traffic, not just real estate as a primary ad or like a billboard, is one of the ways that we're able to drastically distinguish ourselves from everyone else. And when I speak to other newsletter operators about it, they freak out. I would never run guaranteed CPC. Why not? It's more fair to the advertiser. It's fair to you. And so long as there's no time limit where you refund the money if you don't deliver it, you can run ads for 3 months, for 6 months to deliver those clicks. And this goes back to the conversation of frequency. The more emails you send, the less of an issue that becomes. So guaranteed CPC is one of the many ways that we've been able to really, really, really increase revenue and increase close rate and win business and win advertising dollars over other newsletters.
How do you not worry about reader fatigue with that volume of content?
Well, the cool thing for us is we're just sharing news every day. YouTube, Facebook ads, Google, they change an algorithm, they introduce a new feature. And so it's kind of like if you trade the stock market, right? Like every day you need to know what's going on globally. Marketers and entrepreneurs need to know what's going on in the marketing world. So the content that we create is not, it's not taking us 4 hours to write a super long, well-researched thing. We're essentially curators, curating everything that we see across Twitter, across niche case study sites that you've probably never heard of, but that we're going to surface for you. Like, you're trusting us to curate that for you.
Say a bit more about how you have diversified your business beyond the sponsorships. You have this agency now where you have other products and services that you're able to offer to your audience. There's a lot of creators, I think, that are fearful of selling things directly to their audience because they, you know, I call it kind of like direct versus indirect monetization. With an indirect model, you can sell sponsorships, you can get YouTube AdSense, and you never have to have a sales conversation with your audience, right? You never have to say, hey, pay me money for something, right? There's a whole other crew of people who are much more comfortable with direct monetization and coaching and courses and books and, you know, all that. How do you feel confident to straddle both?
If you're unhappy with how much money you make and you have a decent sized audience, that's why you're not making more money. It's because you're not promoting more of your own products or services. It's as simple as that. Like, if you're waking up every day going, I'm afraid to sell something to my audience, but you're unhappy with how much money you're making, I think the biggest misnomer here, the biggest misconception here is that people will dislike you if you sell them things. It's the opposite. You've earned their trust. You've earned the right to sell them something, right? They follow you. They clicked follow. There's a billion accounts on Instagram. People only follow, I don't know, 500, 2,000. I follow like 3,000. People only follow a few thousand out of billions. The percent is 0.00000, right? Like, they chose you. You were good enough to earn their attention. Why not give them the opportunity, again, with empathy, to say, hey, a lot of people in my space struggle with this thing. I figured out how to no longer struggle with this thing. Pay me $500. Pay me $100. To no longer struggle with this thing. Like, you're doing them a favor. You're doing them a service. You're getting them closer to some outcome that's going to make their life better. And it's almost better that it comes from you than if it comes from an advertiser. And here's why. This is like the deepest, most serious level of the misconception. If I came to you, whoever's listening or watching, if I came to you and I said, I want to sponsor your newsletter. And you said, great, it's $2,000 for two ads. And I sponsor the newsletter and I get 5 new clients out of your list, right? From your audience. What if I suck at my job? What if your audience has a terrible, terrible, terrible experience with whatever it is that I promoted to them? You are not able to control the end result, the end outcome of that. And so I would much rather have full control over the quality and the output of the experience of whatever it is that I'm selling to my audience than trusting someone else to do it. To your point, I straddle both. This month, it'll be roughly 60-40. 60% of the ads will be from advertisers, 40% will be promoting our own products. And we've increased our revenue 40 to 45% as a direct result of that. Every quarter, I send out a type form with different questions. I call it our Q1, Q2, Q3 audience survey. I ask, what's your biggest struggle right now? What marketing tool or service do you wish existed that you haven't seen before? You know, what kind of services are you looking for? How's your business doing? Oh, it's good? Why is it good? All with conditional logic. Oh, it's bad? Why do you think it's bad? What can I do, or what introductions can I make to make it easier or better or more successful for you? And then I punch all those answers into ChatGPT and I say, what course? What service? What intro can I make? What's the biggest thing that people are wanting? I can listen to my audience and I can go build that. That is like the greatest opportunity to an entrepreneur of all time. I want to find the demand in the market and meet it where it is. And as content creators, we have the ability to find what that is instantly. It's so much easier to go to the audience and say, hey, what do you guys want? And then build it and then go back and say, you told me you wanted this, than it is to just wake up and guess, oh, I think they might want this. I think they might want that.
Knowing how important it is for you to control that experience that your readers or audience have with their interaction with your brand, tell me about your vetting process or criteria for advertisers, given that it is still a large percentage of your revenue. Yeah. How do you determine, like, you know, you don't want to put a crappy offer in front of them and they have a bad experience?
Yeah. Candidly, we could probably do a better job of this, but we have a simple like 5-6 point checklist where we review all of their reviews. We typically will ask to speak to one of their clients if they're a marketing agency. We mainly ask, what other newsletters have you advertised? And if you've never, or if you have advertised in a newsletter, and oftentimes we know the other operator of that newsletter. And so we can reach out and say, hey, you know, were these stand-up guys, was the performance okay? Do you have any warnings? And every once in a while, they'll say, yeah, this tagline worked really, really, really well. Or, man, that offer totally flopped. Or, you know, someone signed up for their free trial and then kept charging their credit card and they couldn't get a hold of it, so they had to do a chargeback. Like,
okay, so this is not something that I would normally do, but since you're a savvy marketer, savvy negotiator, I was hoping that we could do a role play. Okay. I want you to pretend that I am an advertiser that submitted an inquiry. I said, yes, Max, I am interested in getting in front of 200,000 B2B marketers. And you and I are going to hop on a phone call and we're going to have a qualification conversation. And I want to hear how you react to some of the objections I bring up. What do you think of that?
Challenge accepted. Let's see how I do.
Okay, Max, I am so unbelievably excited to chat with you because we have a groundbreaking software tool. We are using the latest and greatest flavor model in ChatGPT for our tool. And we help marketers do social listening way better than any other tool that exists on the market. And we really want to go big with this launch. And so we'd love to hear your ideas on how we could make that happen.
Cool. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. Your tool sounds awesome. And social listening is often something that we talk about in our organic content, not just necessarily in our ads. So it seems like just on the surface level, that could be a great fit. But look, I mean, I know everyone's super busy these days. I appreciate you taking 30 minutes to chat with me. I'd love to start by just doing a rapid fire of questions to better get to know exactly what your product does, what the unique selling propositions are, how you guys are currently getting clients. And then I can tell you as much or as little as you could want to know about us, and we can figure out together if it makes sense to work together. How does that sound?
Yeah, it sounds great. Go, shoot.
Cool. So you're using AI to generate better results for social listening. I use Sifton currently. I don't promote it to my audience, but I use Sifton.com. Why are you guys better than Sifton?
Well, we have a bunch of data science PhDs on our staff, and they've gone through Sifton and some of the other tools on the market, and the level of research or the level of results that we're able to uncover is just like a much broader cross-section of the internet. A lot of those tools are very surface level, just from like Twitter or Reddit or whatever. But like, we go super deep into very niche sites, social media. We have partnerships with some of the social networks and so on. So it's just much deeper results.
I love that. Yeah, I can already see a tagline or something along the lines of, you know, we surface 3x more opportunities than your current social listening tool or something like that. Do you guys do sales calls for these contracts, or is it more self-service? People just sign up on their own?
Usually it's self-service. We have been considering going, like, you know, doing sales calls, moving up kind of more of like an enterprise level sales experience, but we haven't yet.
If the goal in some sort of partnership is probably then self-service, do you have any sort of LTV data on what like the average lifetime value of a potential user is?
We're still working on dialing that in, but the LTV, you know, is somewhere on the order of $2,000.
A couple thousand bucks. Cool. How are you guys currently getting users, and like, how big are you guys revenue wise and on the marketing side? Walk me through those numbers.
Yeah, I'm not able to share revenue because it's not public data. But yeah, I am able to share that, you know, most of our acquisition has been through word of mouth. You know, we haven't really done much beyond PPC, but so far it's, you know, we're looking to throw gas on the fire since we feel like we have product market fit.
Got it. You mentioned PPC. Is that Google ads? Like, or yeah. Is that, mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you able, and if you don't know off the top of your head, that's totally fine, but are you able to potentially share like a landing page conversion rate for your Google ads traffic, like 2%, 10%? Visitors.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not able to share that data, but it's healthy.
Right. It's healthy. Cool. So yeah, we oftentimes work with partners on a cost per click basis. And so if you have that number and don't feel comfortable sharing it, that's fine. Depending on the investment that you would come in at, we can back into what a projected cost to acquire a customer would be based on an average of, let's say, $5 cost per click. So, you know, if you're generating 10% of all website visitors or landing page visitors into a free trial, and you can kind of back into those metrics, we could work out a partnership where, at least for the first campaign, the first proof of concept partnership engagement, we are trying to meet and beat actually your Google Ads performance.
So actually that's surprising to me. I guess the $5 CPL or CPA, I mean, we're getting like significantly less than that on Google. Is that what it's going to cost to advertise with you?
It depends on the number that you come in at. So depending on what kind of budget you're thinking to start, we can go as low as $1 or $2, but I'd be pretty shocked to hear that your CPC is significantly lower than $5 for a qualified click on Google, having run a lot of Google ads ourselves. But let me ask you, if you know your numbers so well, what kind of CPC would you be looking for to make this kind of thing work? I mean, we worked with another tool, true story, by the way, side note, true story. We worked with another tool that does something similar, but in the Reddit space. And they only do Reddit social listening, Reddit audit commenting. And they came to us and they said, hey, we need a $2.50 CPC for our funnel to work. We know exactly our landing page. And frankly, dude, those are the best clients and advertisers for us to work with, because we want to see you win. And if we can figure out a mutually beneficial way for you to get the numbers that you need and for us to get the numbers that we need to make sure that we're fair to all of our other advertisers, this is going to be a win-win for both of us. So yeah, if you know kind of what the average CPC number would be, great. We can also do a completely different type of engagement. We can run you in a dedicated send. We can run a handful of primary or secondary ads. It really just comes down to like what your core or KPIs are. Some advertisers, they come to us and they want a very specific dialed in CPC. Other advertisers come to us and they just want to buy 4 primary ads across a week or two's worth of newsletters and see how it goes. I just thought from your explanation that you guys are currently doing PPC, you would have some of those numbers and be a little bit more of a sophisticated brand than most that we work with.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You're calling me out here. $2.50. That's kind of what we would be targeting. Cool. So it's cool to hear that you have like some case studies of other brands that you've done. So can I wire you $50K right now? Is that something I could do?
$50K at a $2.50 CPC is probably a little low. We'd be looking at like the $7 to $8 million range for a campaign like that.
And scene. The first thing I want to call out is that you played the role of a consultant super well. Like almost immediately, like I asked a couple questions and you were like, hold on, let me just like flip it back to you. I want to ask some questions about you. You can get into all of like how I can help you and all that, but like, tell me like what's going on with you. Tell me more about your business. Tell me about some of the challenges. Like that's the number one thing that I advise in scenarios like this, especially if you're not someone who's ever done many sales calls or you don't have a ton of experience engaging. It's just, if you even need to like write a list of these questions down before the call so you don't forget them and you stay on track, that can like really set the tone really well in these conversations, because they feel as though you're listening and not just talking about themselves the whole time, right? The second thing that I thought was really interesting that you did was you were really digging in to my numbers, and you were really digging into like the economics behind our business. And I think a lot of creators are very nervous to do that, right? Because they feel as though the brand's going to be uncomfortable or upset or annoyed, or like I'm overstepping my bounds or something like that. Let them tell you that. Let them volunteer as much information about their brand or their business as possible, because that will give you a huge amount of fodder, a huge amount of data that you can use to design a better proposal. So I thought that like, let them tell you, no, I can't tell you that, right? They're not going to be mad. They're just going to be like, you know, or I don't know. They might tell you they don't know. Also, you're revealing other things you might be able to help them with, right? Because I could tell in your mind, you're also thinking, oh, well, if you don't have a sales motion, maybe that's something that our agency could help you with, not just running ads in the newsletter. Maybe we could also stand up a sales team or help you figure out that process, help you acquire customers more profitably. So you're, you know, going back to that whole balance between ads and done for you or done with you services, that could be another way in which you could help them, right? The 4 or 5 ways or whatever, right? Another really interesting thing I think you did was you talked about the case studies of you've worked with another brand in a similar category as them. It's a little bit different. It's only for Reddit. And then now all of a sudden as an advertiser, I'm like, oh, you get me. You understand some of the challenges that I, you know, am facing. The overall vibe that I felt was like, you're confident. You've done this a ton of times before. My money will be well spent. If I spend $50K or $7-8 million, you know, with you, I'm not going to look like an idiot if I have to go to my boss later and like justify this investment. So there's just so many, I think, really, really fascinating things about what you did that I think a lot of people can learn from. So yeah, well done, man.
First of all, I would love feedback on what I could have done better.
Yeah.
Even though I don't take these calls, I'm always trying to learn. But you're right. I'm always trying to be a consultant for all the reasons that you just mentioned. They'll feel more confident in the sale, but also I will be able to direct them to the product that is going to be the best fit for them. Why do I want that to be the case? Well, I want them to succeed because I want everyone to win in life, right? I want everyone to succeed, especially if you give me money. I want to help you. I want to have a positive impact, but also you're more likely to come back and buy again and again,
right?
And again. And so if you said, we do a lot of demo sales calls, right? Like we try to get on the phone with our customers. I would have said, oh, what we do, you know, we used to run ads and we can certainly sell you 3 or 4 primary ads and we can run it as a test. But we have this really cool thing now where we do a cost per lead. And at any given time, we're running like 4 or 5 cost per lead campaigns where we're just finding inventory that we think is going to work best. We kind of take a performance approach to see is a top ad in the morning newsletter, or a bottom ad in the evening newsletter, or a secondary ad or whatever going to do best. We optimize the landing page. You're right. I am trying to see where their biggest gaps are. The thing that I think is really, really, really important to remember is you're not just selling a billboard. The moment you start thinking of it as either a performance marketing channel, you're helping them drive a specific amount of traffic or from a specific audience, right? Or a specific amount of leads or a specific amount of signups or whatever it is, right? Or webinar signups. Some people come to us and like, we want to promote a webinar, right? The moment you start thinking about different products that you can sell these people, not just a billboard, the more clever you can get with products, thinking about them as media products and not just a billboard, man, you'll make so much more money, your close rate will go higher, and the advertisers will have more success.
It's all about trustworthiness, right? It's wrapping them in a warm and fuzzy hug that if you invest this amount of money, everything's going to be fine. I'm going to take care of you. If we can't fulfill what we promise, we'll take, you know, we're going to make you whole. It's the same with consumer psychology, right? When you're trying to sell someone something, they all have objections. Will this work for me? Can I find a better deal elsewhere? You know, all these things that they're thinking in their head. Marketers and business and brands, they're thinking the same. They have the same objections. If I invest with Max, is it going to be good? Is my boss going to think I'm an idiot? You know, like, hey, will I get a promotion? Like, if this goes well, you know, there's all these like human challenges, right? And so you're totally right. Like, thinking about it from this standpoint, having empathy goes so, so far, dude.
One other thing I want to hammer home on is you brought up like consultative approach, question asking, right? I want to kind of bring that full circle really quickly because that's another really big aspect of taking your business from making 20K a year to making 2 million bucks a year. Like changing the mindset of asking questions to uncover what they really want and where they're trying to spend their money, whether it's the person that you're on the phone with, like they're making the decisions or someone higher up has made the decisions, is great for a bunch of reasons. But the real secret sauce, like juice to do that is you start noticing trends or patterns of what people really want, you can then create products that make it easy for them to say, oh yeah, I want that. And a perfect example of this is we record all of our sales calls, we punch it into AI, we ask AI, what do people want? We do this every quarter. It turned out in Q4, we got a significantly higher amount of requests for social partnerships, Twitter threads, Instagram shout outs, where we drive most of our revenue to the newsletter business, right? Newsletter ads. And so last week, we put a Q1 special of a social shout out bundle where you get a Twitter thread and an Instagram pack or Instagram post and a TikTok post along with newsletters. And we just literally show that on the call. It's like, hey, you know, you could buy some newsletter ads via CPC. You could do the CPL thing or social. And it's just an easy thing for them to go, that's what we want, because my boss, to your point earlier, right? My boss says we need to do more social partnerships this month.
Such amazing stuff. You asked for some constructive feedback. Can I give you one?
Please give me 100.
One change I would consider making is in the language or the logic of when you're asking for budget in your type form. And you have likely seen this in your own sales calls, probably for your own products, is that sometimes you will get leads on a call who by the end of that call, they're offering to pay you 10x.
Yeah.
What they thought they were going to when they started the call, right? Just simply because you did what you just did. You're right. You listened, you understood them. And now by the end of it, they're like, okay, I could justify paying this guy 10 times more. And so my hesitation and concern whenever people have logic and forms and things like that to, can you meet the minimum? Do you have the minimum budget required? But that would be my concern, is that you are filtering out prospective clients that may ultimately pay you a lot of money just based on that form. They just kind of either lied or did they set a number that wasn't representative? And then you just didn't even get a Slack notification to get on a call with them because they didn't meet that.
That's great feedback. I actually thought when you started that, it was going to go the other way. I thought you were going to say if your minimum is too low, it might push people who have much bigger budgets away. And I was going to have an objection handle for that. But I don't have an objection handle for the one that you had. So that's great feedback, and I appreciate it. I need to take a look at the way that we asked that question, both in the newsletter sign up and in the newsletter call out itself, because we have two different forms.
Yeah, you seem like a data guy. What I would look to do would be to do an A-B test. A-B test that form. You know, half the audience gets each. One has maybe a slightly different way that you ask that question and see the level of sales calls or the level of application, the quality of the application. I don't know. There's probably an experiment that you can do there that would yield some interesting results.
There is definitely. And I'm going to Slack her as soon as we get off and try to figure out the fastest way to get an A-B test done.
Dude, if I'm a B2B marketer and I'm like, I got to get in touch with this guy. I got to subscribe to his newsletter. I got to pay this guy. What's the best place for people to go?
Marketingmax.com. I finally became a sophisticated enough entrepreneur and ponied up $5,000 for the domain instead of .io. So marketingmax.com, please go there so I can take advantage of my investment there. But I am most responsive on Twitter DMs. Like, my wife sometimes knows if I don't text her back and I'm working, like, DM me on Twitter. Like, I am the most responsive person on Twitter DM. So at marketingmax on Twitter, if you have a question, I won't charge you anything forever. Just feel free to send me a voice note, Loom video, anything you need. I'm happy to help. I just want to see everyone win.
This is great, man. Thanks again.